everyone, there's only so much time in the day. That's why we edited this Vermont Edition podcast for brevity. I know you'll thank us.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Vermont was the last state in the United States to surpass 10,000 official cases of COVID-19, but it is rapidly moving beyond that number, with still more than 100 new cases a day. However, the state does have some optimism that the rise has plateaued and, in fact, may be coming down. Almost a week of a decline in cases in Vermont and around the country has some people optimistic. Also some optimism, as close to 35,000 Vermonters have gotten at least one dose of the COVID vaccine. More than 40,000 doses have been administered out of a total of 74,000 doses that the state has received. However, that optimism tempered by the fact that the state and all states are hampered by a federal vaccine rollout that has been much slower than anticipated. And Governor Scott saying in today's press conference that there's not much the state can do to pick up the pace. They are really beholden to the federal government on what schedule they can use to administer the COVID-19 vaccine. The next phase of rollout for Vermont residents aged 75 and older is scheduled to begin next week. The state's registration website and phone number will be open to begin taking reservations on January 25th, and vaccinations for this age group are planned to begin on January 27th, which is next Wednesday. Lots of questions still exist for individuals about how this will actually happen and how their specific situation fits into the state's plan. We will get to some of those questions today in our weekly health update. And in a little while, we'll talk more specifically with a community organizer in the Burlington-Winooski area about how new American Vermonters are getting appropriate information about the vaccine as part of the state's stated priority of health equity for Vermonters of color. But first, we turn to Deputy Health Commissioner Tracy Dolan. Tracy, welcome back. Thank you very much for joining us again.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for having me, Jane.
I mentioned the vaccine rollout. Still, those dates are the ones that are accurate and appropriate, Deputy Commissioner. The 25th is when registration will open and actual shots in arms will begin for Vermonters 75 and above on the 27th.
That's right. We're gearing up for that and we're looking forward to it.
And as of right now, the state has not released the phone number or the website address where Vermonters will be able to register. When is that information going to be public, even if the registration won't go live until the 25th?
Right now, we're saying on the 25th, come to our website and you will see a registration site and you will see a phone number either then or soon after then to assist. But until then, there's no phone number that you can call to get registered or to find out more information. Go to our website, read through, and check in again. And on the 25th, you will see a link for registration.
Wait, the state has to be providing a different way for Vermonters to get a phone number if Vermonters who don't have internet are going to have to use the phone number.
Yes, so we'll be putting it out through media as well.
Okay, and so that won't be, nobody will be able to get the address. It's like a secret, secret cool thing. You're not going to get it until the 25th, essentially?
The 25th. It may be before the 25th in terms of being able to see it, but we're going to say the 25th for sure. And hopefully we'll be able to get that information out a little bit earlier. But the website is one place. That's our main place to go. Other places will also have the information. Local areas on aging, agencies on aging will have the information. Hospitals will have the information. Other places, other media outlets will have the information. I wouldn't recommend calling them now, but the primary place, if you have access, is to go to the internet. But we will be putting it out consistently on media as soon as we have the available information for both the website and the phone number to assist for those who need that information.
Human Services Secretary Mike Smith said today in the state's press conference that he's confident that the state website will be fine, that it won't crash. No echoes of Vermont Health Connect and the rollout of that a few years ago. He says it's more like it because it's based on the state's website for scheduling COVID-19 tests. But, you know, given the fact that none of it's going live until the 25th, even people who are older than 75 may be sort of entering that website or checking it out or trying to get information. And I think there are like 49,000 Vermonters who are in that 75 and up age category. If all of them were trying to get an appointment at the same time, wouldn't that overburden the website?
You know, I'm not an IT expert, but when you say it like that, it sounds like it might.
However, I'm worried about it.
Yes. Well, I mean, we're all a little worried about it. We're testing it this week to make sure that it runs to the best of our ability. However, also just recognizing that probably everyone won't be going there all at once. You know, some folks have already been vaccinated because they've been part of long-term care. Some folks associated with hospitals or in hospitals may have been vaccinated by their hospitals. So there are some other avenues. We've already been reaching some of this population. But yes, we recognize a lot of people are going to hit our website and probably the phone number on Monday. And the people building the system are aware of that, and they're building it to be robust. And I think the best we can say is we anticipate that it'll be up and functioning, and we are testing this week. And so far, everything is on track.
Do you know some of the details about the website that you could help walk us through just to reassure us? Like, here's the type of question that I want to ask you. Like, will you, in the same way that the state registration for COVID-19 tests currently exists, you, when you go on, you register, and then you search for an available day and an available place. So you can see what places have have testing availability on any given day, and then you can go in and choose a time. Is that how it's going to work as well for the vaccine?
There will be demographic information, so you'll be entering your name and some information about yourself. There'll be some screening questions so that you can make a good decision about your vaccination. And then there will be information about the location nearest you where you should go for a vaccine, those kinds of information, and then specific appointments as well. I can't speak to exactly whether you choose a location or whether a location is made available to you based on your address. I'm not as certain about that. But I can tell you that all of those pieces, you'll be able to do it all comprehensively online.
You know, in New York State, where there's already an opening of vaccine availability for those, I believe, age 65 and above, and some who are prioritized by their professions, there are already reports of people traveling for hours to get to a place with an early vaccine opening. Do you anticipate that maybe a situation in Vermont, somebody in Newport may be looking at, you know, where can I get it earliest, and finding an appointment in Manchester and traveling all the way down from Newport to Manchester just to get the vaccine early?
You know, I'm not certain that you'll be able to choose in that way. It might be that based on your address that you'll be pivoted to the location nearest you. So I can't answer that. I am hopeful that people choose locations near them because we have allocated vaccine by population density and by what we know to be the population that's eligible in different parts of Vermont. So I think our hope is that you go on and you actually register for a clinic, for a vaccination appointment in your area, because that makes most sense with our allocation plan.
Okay, but you're not certain about that, or you are certain about that?
No, I am not certain about whether or not you can choose, but our preference is that if you get to choose, you choose the area closest to you. But I'm not certain if you choose or if you will be given an appointment in a location based on your address.
Where are the types of places that people will get their vaccine administered?
So we have not formally completed the location list, and so I'd not be able to provide that today. I believe that the governor will probably speak to that on Friday, but there will be several sites in each district area. So where you're living, you'll likely have a couple of options, including possibly a pharmacy option as well. And so we're looking at locations that are accessible to people, preferably a couple of locations, and also hopefully a pharmacy partner as well.
So, you know, it's I understand all of this is still being developed. And in fact, you know, all of this, the whole thing from the vaccine development on through, you know, the pandemic is a moving target and all of it is moving fast. But I think there are a lot of Vermonters who are starting to feel anxious about all of the details that have not yet even been revealed. And, you know, certainly they can't register yet, but it would be reassuring to people to know how they register, what kind of place they're going to be able to have the vaccine administered, how the website is going to work. And it's, I think, a little frustrating for some people. It's certainly a little bit confusing to me why that hasn't been figured out now, with just a week to go before Vermonters are going to start being involved in this mass vaccination program.
Yeah, no, I understand. In the same way that we had testing happening in a variety of locations, if folks understand how that has worked, that might be helpful to know. And so, for example, you were able to go to different types of locations for testing, the same for the vaccination clinics. So we'll have different kinds of locations that way. But you're right. I can understand people's frustration not knowing everything. The challenge of putting the information out early is that we also don't want those locations to be inundated with phone calls. And so we're really trying to make sure all systems are ready to go so that when we are ready to give appointments, we have a really good structure and a way to get people the information they need. What's also frustrating is for Vermonters to know some of the information and then start making calls and not getting the information they need. So we are building this as quickly as we can, and we appreciate people's patience while we figure it out and put in our final plans.
And just to be clear, you know, the state is asking people not to call their primary care provider, not to call the state health department, and not to call pharmacies, because those people won't necessarily have the correct information for them, particularly your pharmacy or your primary care provider.
Yeah, they will not have information for you. And primary care providers don't have vaccine at this time. Some pharmacies do, but primarily for long-term care facilities. And the health department, if you call the main number, they're not involved. We will have a separate number unique for registration. And then, of course, we will have the website that you will be able to connect to through our internet. And recognizing not everybody has access to the internet, what we are hoping is that for seniors who can, they do it that way. Or for seniors who may have access to their adult children or someone else to assist them. That will be the primary way we ask people to get information. But of course, we know not everyone can. There'll be a phone number. And then, of course, listening to the media, areas for aging in the different communities as well, getting information out. So we're going to try to flood as many ways as we can.
Yeah. So we got a note from Julie who tweets, I'll be helping my mom register for a vaccine starting next week. So I'm wondering if you can give us a walkthrough of what to expect from start to finish. We've talked a little bit about some of what you know and what you don't know right now, Deputy Commissioner, but Julie's asking for a few other things too. So Julie says, what kind of info is needed to register? Will we be assigned a place to go? What kind of information do we need on the spot when we turn up for the appointment? And will the state do anything in support of making sure the second dose follow-up happens? So let's start with what you know about what kind of information somebody is going to have on hand in order to register. What kind of documents might they want to bring with them to their computer when they register?
Sure. And again, I don't have all of that information, but it would be the same kinds of information you might have had when you registered for a test, for a COVID-19 test. So you're going to be giving your name, your birth date. We will be asking some questions about some health conditions. We will be asking if you have any acute infection now. And if you do, we'll be recommending you don't get vaccinated at this time. So if you have a current COVID infection and you're in that phase right now, we recommend you not get tested. So we'll be asking some questions like that. We're going to try to keep it to a minimum and really ask only the essential questions. We'll be asking, for your address, that kind of information, but nothing we will not expect you to have a lot of documentation with you when you register. We're trying to make this as seamless and as easy as possible. And then when you come to your appointment, the system should give you anything that you need to bring. But at this time, I don't think you'll need to bring anything unique. You may need to bring some identification. I'm not certain of that. So don't have all those answers right now, Jane. Mm-hmm. But the second appointment, we will work with you to make sure that second appointment happens, because that's really important. Because once you get the first dose, then we need to reserve that second dose for you. So we're going to walk you through and give you your appointment for the second dose. We'll either do that right at registration or when you arrive for your appointment. But we will take care of that so that your second appointment is in place. We won't be waiting for you to reach back out to us. We will work on that with you.
Let's go to John calling in from Montpelier. Hi, John. Go right ahead.
Yeah. Regarding what you need when you go to get it, my wife and I lived in Vermont for 30 years, had our kids here. We moved away for a number of years, and we returned in November, bought a house in Montpelier, all that kind of stuff. But you know, everything's moving slowly because of COVID, and getting Vermont driver's licenses and all that kind of thing. I'm not sure we're going to have that sort of identification in hand by the time our number gets called. If we don't, what do you suppose we do after that?
Yeah, Deputy Commissioner, we're getting a lot of questions from people who wonder, how are you going to prove whether someone's a Vermont resident or not? And, you know, what kind of documentation are they going to need?
No, it's a great question. And I don't have all those answers today, so I may have to get back to you. We do require that someone either gets their health care here or is a resident here. And a lot of that would happen during the registration process. So I'll have to get back to you, Jane, on whether or not we're going to require anything more than that.
Well, it was interesting because last week in the press conference, AHS Secretary Mike Smith said you would need proof of Vermont residency, and that hadn't been the case previously. And in fact, as was asked today in the press conference, for a while it was assumed that second homeowners who were residing in Vermont, for now at least through the pandemic, would be eligible. And that's not the case either. In fact, Secretary Smith said today, Vermonters who are second homeowners in Vermont who have not started the residency process have other options, and they are not prioritized. Permanent Vermonters are prioritized. And that's, again, creating a lot of anxiety with not a lot of concrete information.
No, I understand. A lot of this really is about our allocation and how tight that allocation is. So we're really trying to prioritize. We're trying to decrease mortality and morbidity and hospitalization. And so we're having to really be careful about the precious small amount of vaccine that we have and make sure it gets into people who are highest risk and who don't have options elsewhere. So that's part of the reasoning for that. But in terms of the documentation you'll need, it won't be substantial documentation. It should be documentation that most people have access to. But I don't have all those answers now. Some of that is still under development so that we have it all ready when people register and when people start calling.
Is the state asking people who are residing in Vermont to leave the state to go get a vaccine during a time when movement is restricted and really discouraged because of how much COVID-19 is in our communities? I mean, somebody who's been sheltering here for 3 or 4 months or 10 months, but technically isn't a resident and who now will have to go to Florida or New York or whatever state their residency is in to get the vaccine and then come back. I mean, that just sounds challenging and perhaps not safe for COVID restrictions.
Yeah, the priority will be 75 and older, and it will be for Vermont residents. And once we are more clear about how you show that you're a Vermont resident, I think the recommendation will be if you're 75 and older and you're not a Vermont resident and you don't qualify, then you will have to probably go elsewhere for your vaccine at this time with the current allocation that we know that we're getting right now. If allocation changes, you know, things could change. But as we are right now, given the priority we need, it may be that people who aren't residents here may have to go elsewhere for a vaccination.
Let's go to Stephen calling in from Stratford. Hi, Stephen.
Hi. I was wondering, I want the Pfizer vaccine. Can I find out a place when I register that will give me the Pfizer vaccine?
So specifically, you want the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, not the other one that has also been approved. Can I ask you why?
Well, you can. It's because I heard that it has less preservatives. That's why it's colder.
So, yeah, Deputy Commissioner Dolan, are people going to be able to know which of the vaccines they've gotten? Are they going to be able to choose? Can they choose at all? And will they know which one they've gotten?
They will know which one they've gotten. At this time, there won't be an opportunity to choose. Our allocation is very small, and so we have to use what we have. And so if you go to a particular clinic, it will be the vaccine that's available at that clinic.
So, Stephen, let me come back to you. Is that going to affect how and when you decide to get your dose?
I'm not going to do that. I'm going to wait until I'm sure that I have a Pfizer vaccine.
Ah, so you may delay. I mean, it sounds like you will delay then getting the vaccine until you're able to make your choice about which type of
vaccine. I've been having second thoughts and third thoughts, but, you know, my family members have all wanted me to get it, you know, and so I did some research and I decided that that was the vaccine I want. And if I can't get that, then I'm not getting it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not really that worried. My immune system is pretty strong. I eat very well. I take care of myself.
Stephen, thank you for sharing your perspective with us. Deputy Commissioner, do you have anything that you want to say to Stephen or to others who may be now wondering the same thing?
Sure. Yeah, I do want to say that both vaccines were put through rigorous safety tests. They're both very effective. They are slightly different in terms of the way we store them. And in terms of the timelines, a slight difference in the second, first and second dose, but we are very confident in the safety and efficacy of both. And just really noting that even though people may feel very healthy, they may have what they consider a great immune system, they may eat well, and all of those things are important for health, they do not have much of a bearing on whether or not you become infected with COVID-19. And they don't appear to have much of a bearing then on, your outcome. So the infection of COVID-19 is a significant threat to people over 75. So I would encourage you as much as possible to seek out the vaccine. It helps you, but it also helps all of your neighbors. Achieving herd immunity allows us to get back to normal more quickly and protects everyone. And so it's great that you're doing all the healthy things, and I'm glad that a lot of people are doing that, but it wouldn't stop you from getting COVID-19 were you to be exposed and were you to unfortunately contract the illness.
Do you know anything about the difference in preservatives between the two approved vaccines?
I cannot speak to the difference in preservatives, no.
Deputy Commissioner, we heard from a listener who wants to know about safety and preserving distancing regulations at vaccination sites. This listener writes, is there any discussion of enhancing safety at these vaccination sites, like the Champlain Valley Exposition in Essex Junction? I think this listener got a vaccine and said the lobby had 50-plus people in it for more than an hour when I was there, and it was the riskiest thing I've done since the pandemic started.
Sure, that's a great question. So we actually have a safety team that looks at each location and our operational plan to ensure that we have the appropriate distancing and to make sure that people are moving through the space and that we don't have people lingering. And so that's all been worked into our vaccination plans and our clinic planning. So it won't be like a usual clinic where you might go and a lot of people are waiting in a waiting room and people are bunched together. We make sure and we give people appointment times for that reason, so that you're showing up for your appointment and you're leaving, so that we can minimize the number of people waiting and really maximize the physical space between people as well. And of course, PPE is all provided and masks will be expected. So all of those additional things will happen. And that's how it will look different from maybe any other vaccine clinic you've been to.
One more question before we switch gears a little bit. One more question about the how exactly people will register and what they need to know. We've gotten questions from some people who want to know when it comes to that age 75 and older tier, is that being done by birth year or birthday? In other words, if your birthday is later this year and you will be turning 75, can you still get the vaccine because your birth year is in line with the birth year that's being allowed in? Or is it actually by your actual birthday?
It's by your actual birthday. You need to be 75 when you register. And if any of that changes, we'll let you know. But for now, if you're 75, you can register. If you're not 75 yet, you can't register. It's about 75 and older.
Last week, in discussing how the state was going to live up to its stated priority of ensuring that Vermonters of color are treated fairly in the vaccine process, given the fact that people of color in Vermont and beyond are at significantly higher risk of contracting COVID-19, the state said its current vaccination schedule will prioritize people by age first and certain health conditions second, neither of which are necessarily going to capture broad swaths of the population in Vermont that includes people of color. And the state said it will be working instead to make sure it gets accurate information out to various communities and populations in Vermont. You know, it seemed earlier on, Deputy Commissioner, that the state was saying that it wanted to ensure health equity, which would ensure that Vermonters of color were getting, if not priority access, at least being able to get the vaccine in an appropriate time frame. That might mean vaccination clinics in concentrated communities of color in Vermont. But that's not what we're hearing from the state right now. Can you talk a little bit about what the state is doing to ensure that Vermonters of color are protected?
Yeah, it's actually similar to what you've just described in your latter statement. We are working to ensure that clinics will be accessible. So even in our age groups now, we're going to be reaching out to communities of color and saying 75 plus, let's make sure that people of color in the 75 plus range are able to register. Let's provide some assistance if we need to do that, given that this is a higher risk group. So doing that for the age ranges, but also as we open up to chronic conditions, recognizing that being a person of color is an additional risk factor for COVID-19, in part because of the cultural issues that we have around white supremacy and our history of racism and the history of mistrust in public health because of the background of some of the things that public health has done in this country in the past. And so making sure that we do locate some clinics in areas that have higher concentration of people of color. So we are actually going to proactively do additional things besides just to educate and promote. And we're going to be, and we are partnering with folks in those communities to make sure the information gets out there, the trust is built, but also to provide greater access. We may also, for example, as Dr. Levine mentioned, where we do go in and vaccinate somebody in a particular age group, because we know there are more multi-generational housing situations in some communities, we may also look at opportunities to vaccinate, for example, a household if there are risks in that household that we see. And so we are actually adjusting some of our methods and our approaches to ensure that we achieve as much equity as we can, recognizing that it is not an even playing field for everyone.
When would the state be allowing people who are not in the age tier to get vaccinated? How would it identify multi-generational households, and when would that be able to start?
So we are doing 75 plus, then 70 plus, then 65 plus. Then we're moving into chronic conditions, and we will also at that time really increase our outreach to the BIPOC community, Black, Indigenous, people of color. And we will do the work then and throughout to ensure that we get clinic access. And so this is really an evolving strategy over time as we reach out and continue partnerships and develop new partnerships.
So younger people in multi-generational households wouldn't be getting the vaccine until after you've gone through those age 65 and above?
That's what I think at this time. We may, one of the reasons we're thinking slightly differently about this community is that when we need to bring in, particularly for people with a limited English proficiency, if we need to bring in interpretation, if we need to bring in, for example, mobile services, if people are homebound, that's a lot of resources to bring in. So it might be more efficient in some cases, but likely that would happen after our 65 and above. And so we may be looking at some differences there in these higher risk communities in order to get the best efficiency for our effort.
Deputy Commissioner Dolan mentioned that the health department is working with members of various communities as sort of health liaisons to make sure they can figure out how to best address the needs of those communities. One of them is Muhammad Abdullahi, who's a Somali refugee and interpreter who's been working as a community health liaison through Burlington's Trusted Community Voices program. And Muhammad is on the line with us now. Muhammad, nice to talk with you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So you just heard what Deputy Commissioner Dolan said about how the state is planning to make sure that Vermonters of color and new Americans are getting all the information they need to not only know about the vaccine process, but to answer questions to ensure more trust in the vaccine process. Does that seem like a good approach to you?
Yes, it's a good approach. And I was in a lot of meetings that happened with community members that they were trying to educate about vaccine. To add on that, our community are very, you know, unfortunate that they don't speak English. And we always get information later than anyone else because it's going to be a second, you know, secondhand information that we always get it. And a good example last time when we get a house in like rental reimbursement, we exhausted everything that we had. And we didn't know that was being is going to be reimbursed. So we always get that kind of secondhand information. And it's very difficult when people don't understand English and they have to, like, wait from, you know, personnel like me or other community members. And it's correct what the commissioner was saying right now. I had participated two, three meetings that were they're only specifically for people who doesn't speak English to educate the vaccine.
Okay, so you are getting information now for those who don't speak English about the vaccination process. Are you already working on translating materials from the state, from the health department on that vaccine program?
Yes, they always do that, and we always get through a lot of resources like USCRI, ALD, they go through that, and we always get the information that's needed and translated. And I'm one of the people who always, you know, help out and do a lot of stuff with them.
Are there enough translators and interpreters in the state to help all the people who may need to have their information translated into different languages, or who may need an interpreter when they're actually going to interact with people, you know, in a vaccine program or to get the vaccine?
I can't tell you how I don't know how they're going to conduct in the future that how it's going to happen vaccine. But for right now, we have enough interpreters, which is very efficient right now.
Mohammed, for your community, you're a Somali refugee. Is there a broad trust in the vaccine program? Do you think the people that you're speaking with are eager to get the vaccine or not?
No, no one is trusting now. As the commissioner was talking about, you can hear that there's not a lot of trust. And most of the time they want to go behind because they get a lot of social media, which is telling them it's harmful, it's killing. A good example, when I was getting my vaccine, because I work with I'm an interpreter working with the doctors, and I qualified to get the vaccine. And, you know, I got all calls or all information, a lot of, like, you know, videos, like, from the social media that they're sending me, trying to stop me taking the vaccine. One of the reasons why they're so scared is they don't know what is the made of this, and they don't, you know, they don't read and go on research because they don't speak English. And what they're getting from the social media is this thing was made, you know, something like, you know, product of some animals that we don't eat, like a pork, like a lot of things that is not, you know, religiously and culturally we don't eat. They kind of, like, social media is saying such thing was added, and people are so scared. One thing, they know that's not something cultural to get it. Second thing is they think this is killing them. And, you know, everyone's seen that, how social media, it's very, you know, advertising how it's very bad. So it took me to take my video and send it to the community members so they can see I'm one of them who took it and I'm okay. And I'm still with the community. So I had to do even that video when I was getting it. And I'm hoping next Sunday when I get the second one, I'm going to do another video.
Have you seen people's attitudes change after seeing your video of you yourself getting the vaccine?
I didn't get a lot of good results, but at least one or two will change. And when, you know, testing was starting last time, it was very difficult for us to, you know, educate people that, you know, it's okay to know your results. You know, it was kind of something that in the community, they didn't, you know, wanted anyone to be, like, labeled that you have a coronavirus. It was very hard, and we had to, you know, with the help of a lot of different agencies in Burlington and Winiski, we go through a lot to educate the communities and make them, you know, to come and test. So I'm expecting the same thing is going to happen now, that we're not going to give up. We will still keep on educating the community and, you know, giving them an example like what I did. And my hope is a lot of people will accept it at the end.
Well, Mohammed, thank you very much for telling me a little bit about your experience and what you're seeing and hearing in your community. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's Mohammed Abdullahi, who's a Somali refugee and an interpreter who's working as a community health liaison with Burlington's Trusted Community Voices program. Deputy Commissioner Tracy Dolan, it's a steep hill to climb when there's a mistrust of public health, and certainly when, you know, depending on what community you come from, there may be a really legitimate mistrust of the public health system based on how people have been treated in the past. How do you overcome that?
Yeah, you know, it's funny when you said a steep hill to climb, I was literally picturing as he was talking, walking up a very, very steep hill. It's a tough one. And I think, you know, somebody reminded us the other day that, so we dive in as public health and say, okay, how do we dismantle this lack of trust and how do we build it up? But the first thing someone mentioned was, you know, we actually have to respect and honor that mistrust is real, and not everyone will change their minds. And so, you know, I think our first piece is listening and respect and honor where it's coming from. And then, given all of that, how do we work with people? And so I think it's that partnership. You know, my voice might not be very effective, but Muhammad's voice might be much more effective. And especially with his posting his videos and all of those things, those aren't always easy to do either. I mean, Muhammad sounds amazing and enthusiastic, but not always easy to do something that might not be very popular in your own community. And to possibly receive some criticism, you know. So I think it's really important for us to continue the partnership. And it takes anyone a long time to change behavior and change their minds. I mean, we've learned in public health generally that behavior change sometimes requires messages many times from many different arenas, through many different sources, and through many different methods. And so that's where it's really not a one approach fits all. It's through programs like yours. It's through Muhammad putting his video up. It's through all of the translation we do. So we have an organization that we funded, and they've translated vaccine safety messages into, I think, 12 languages. Those are out on social media now. So it's just doing this and at the same time making sure we make our clinics accessible so that when someone is ready to take it, we are there ready to have them.
But given what the state has been talking about with inequities in the healthcare system that disproportionately affect people of color, if the priority or the focus of the state plan is to just try to get appropriate and accurate information out, sometimes through trusted voices like Muhammad's, to try to answer questions, to try to provide interpreter services, if those strategies don't work and vaccine uptake is lower in communities of color, does the state then get to wash its hands and say, well, we tried to give information, and if people don't want to take it, that's not really our fault?
Yeah, no, that's not how it works. We don't get to wash our hands generally in anything in public health. If something doesn't work, then, you know, in public health, the community is not wrong. You know, the community is the community. And if the community doesn't take something up or the community doesn't change, then it's our job to go back and say, okay, what's another thing we can do differently? Who's another partner? How do we need to change a message? What else do we need to change? And the reality is, in one given moment, in one 6-week period, we're not going to change decades of racism that's occurred. We're not going to change lifetimes of some people feeling that mistrust. That's not going to change overnight. So there's probably no one measure that will say we've been successful. I mean, if we got 100% uptake, yeah, we probably say we're successful, but we may get 20% more than we would have otherwise, and that will be some success. But there's no washing our hands, and this isn't a one-time relationship. We have learned, and we learn it again and again, that we have to keep reinvesting in these relationships and approaching them with new ideas, more partners like Muhammad, but we just keep working at it. And we keep figuring out, okay, that didn't work. Let's try something else. Okay, part of that worked. What part didn't? And we keep going back to it, talking to the community, finding out what they've experienced as well.
We got a note from Linda who says, can you please restate the specific Vermont guidelines for COVID currently? Are we still holding to 14 days for the quarantine or accepting 10-day quarantines now, which had been advocated for or sort of approved by the CDC?
Yeah, actually, we were kind of ahead of the CDC on this. So it's still 14 days. However, we allow now for, and we have for months, a test out at day 7. So at day 7, if you're asymptomatic, you can get a test. And if you come back negative, once you get that result, then you can be free from quarantine.
Got it. Dana is on the line from Williston. Go right ahead, Dana. Dana, you there? Oh, no, Dana, but I think we have a similar question, actually, from someone on Twitter named Karen, who wants to know, what's the best way to register for the vaccine for two people at once, for themselves and a spouse? And I think Dana wanted to know, similarly, could she register herself and her husband at the same time, or does an individual need to register only for themselves?
Yes, an individual registers just for themselves. If you're 75 plus, for example, coming up now next week, you'll be able to register for yourself, and then the other individual registers too. Of course, you can do it for the other person, but those are two different registrations.
I see. Yes, but you can do it for the other person. You just have to go back into the system and re-register, do the sort of the whole process again?
That's right, unfortunately. I wish we had a quicker way of doing that, but that's how we're doing it.
Okay, so that is different from the current testing site, right? Where right now, you, if you're testing and you want to get, for example, a child tested, you are kind of already in the registration area and you just add another person. That's not how it's going to work for the vaccination schedule.
As far as I know, because there are different screening, the screening questions are different for each person, but I'll have to get back to you to find out if you have to re-enter. They are two different registrations, but I don't know if the entire process is different. There might be an early link and then you're in and you add someone, but I do believe the information for each person is different because of the screening questions as well, because a vaccination is a different type of procedure than getting a test.
Got it. Okay. But you technically can register more than one person at once if they're both eligible for the vaccine. You know, it's not some, you don't have to sign an affidavit saying I am the one registering for myself, technically, or you or a grandchild or whoever could register somebody if they're eligible.
Yes. And we're actually encouraging that for people who are not as comfortable going online to register. Please line up your adult children, your grandchildren, or your the high school student neighbor, whoever you need to assist. And that would be a wonderful way to support your community.
Let's go to Anne, who's calling in from Craftsbury. Hi, Anne. You're on the air.
I'm 86, and I'm housebound, wheelchair bound. It's very difficult for me to get out to go to a test site. I have an additional problem that I've suffered from anaphylaxis twice in the past from different medications, so I want to be near an EpiPen when I finally get it. I don't have one.
I see. So, Deputy Commissioner Dolan, how is someone like Anne, who's housebound and uses a wheelchair, going to be able to get to a place to be vaccinated, or could the vaccine come to her? And how can she make sure she's in a safe place given her history of anaphylactic shock?
Sure. So if somebody receives home health, so if you receive your health care at home through a home health agency, your home health agency will be reaching out once your age group comes up. So for you, that would likely be next week. And they will arrange to have your test, your vaccination given to you in your home. If anybody goes to a clinic site, and so of course, when they come, they would have all emergency services available. Including an EpiPen, yeah. If you go to a site, emergency services would be available there as well. And we do observe somebody after the shot to watch for any kind of reactions. But somebody who's homebound, who receives their health care at home, is eligible to get their vaccination through their home health agency, either the home health agency directly, or they may subcontract through an EMS agency. But your home health agency knows to reach out and will be reaching out soon.
So Anne, somebody in Anne's situation shouldn't register through the state site?
If Anne is not able to go to a clinic, she wouldn't be registering through a state site. Her home health agency would be reaching out to her.
Got it. Thank you. Let's talk just briefly about the school situation. You know, the state's stated goal is to have all Vermont school children back in person by the end of April vacation. Now, that's a goal. It's not a mandate at this point. And Education Secretary Dan French has said from what he's seeing, he thinks the state will be in a condition with the number of cases to do that. But the state right now, especially for high school students and older students, requires a 6-foot distance between all people. In the younger grades, there's an availability to have 3 to 6 feet of distance. Some schools are not able to get everyone in person with the distancing requirements that the state currently has in place of 6 feet or more. So it's hard to think about how everyone getting back into the classroom would happen by April unless that state policy is changed. And if cases are actually higher in April than they were in August and September, which I think is probably a potentially safe assumption, how would the state defend changing policy? Do you have any sense of what might happen on that score, Deputy Commissioner?
Well, I do know that there is a lot of interest in keeping kids in school and getting them back in school. We're hearing a lot about some of the mental health challenges kids are having academically. Kids who struggle with academics are having even more trouble being at home. So I understand the driver to have kids back. We've had relatively low positivity rates among kids and low positivity rates among teachers. So teachers and kids have done a great job in making schools safe. Our numbers right now in the last few days have come down a little. We're hoping that we're going to see these numbers keep going, coming down. We could see a surge with this new variant of the virus probably coming to Vermont. So all of those things in play. I think the goal is, as Secretary French said, to get kids back in school for more in person. But obviously something would have to give, right? I mean, it's simply just physics. You can't squeeze more in and keep 6 feet if they can't fit. And so that's probably a policy issue that they're going to have to look at. I don't know where they're going to come out on that. I think if things are looking better in April, they may look at either that policy shift of possibly a space change or maybe utilizing more outdoor space. I think schools have done different kinds of things. But as of yet, I know that's the goal, but the operations of that haven't been worked out yet.
More to come on that. We've certainly got a couple more months before the end of April, although there's been a push for the entire school year for schools to really prioritize in-person learning. Jackie's calling in from Randolph. Go right ahead, Jackie.
I was listening to the news conference today, and there was a discussion about behavior interventionists that work within the school district getting vaccinated and teachers not, even though they're working with children in the same space. And I wanted to clarify, Dr. Levine didn't seem to understand what behavior interventionists, their job description is, but as a retired educator and behavior specialist myself, I can attest to the fact that most of the service that happens for these kids happens in the classroom, and both the classroom teacher and the interventionist are equally involved in engagement with these kids. So the exposure is the same. And I know that the positions are funded differently, that teachers are funded by public tax dollars, and the behavior interventionists are funded by usually some Medicaid dollars, which are considered health.
Jackie, I'm going to stop you there because I think just in the interest of time, I think you're making a really clear and interesting point here about behavioral interventionists and teachers both in the classroom at the same time. And perhaps the question, Deputy Commissioner, is not why would a behavioral interventionist get the vaccine, but why isn't the state prioritizing teachers given its stated interest in getting all students back to school and the balking you're going to get from so many teachers to do that without safety precautions like the vaccine?
Absolutely. It's been a challenging one. But again, this really comes back to we have a really limited supply of vaccine. And if we look at our data and our morbidity and our mortality, the people who are dying and becoming hospitalized are the elderly. And that's where we must focus. In addition, we have protected healthcare workers because of our healthcare workforce and the possible threat to that workforce with increasing numbers going into hospitals. And so we recognize that there are some categories that are going to be very close to other categories, and it's going to feel unfair at times. We're aiming for equity as best we can based on our data, but occasionally you're going to have one person who may qualify because they're a first responder or maybe providing some kind of personal health services to someone that looks very close to the person next to them. And that's going to happen sometimes. It's not a perfect system, but we feel very confident that what we're doing is the right thing to protect the Vermonters most at risk. Teachers have done an amazing job of staying healthy, of keeping their schools healthy. But I recognize it, and again, really being data driven on this.
All right. Well, Deputy Commissioner Tracy Dolan, thank you as always for sharing your time with us. Really appreciate you answering questions.
Thank you.